Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, tonight's topic is on page 164, Shabbat, the Jew discovers serenity. It was hard for me to read this chapter. Not because the chapter is depressing or difficult in any way, but because the flood of emotional thoughts I had as reading the discussion about Shabbos and the many, many, many elements of Shabbos that I've had the privilege of talking about over the years here in Shul. I was kind of reminded about how important the topic is to me personally and how central it is, of course, to the Jewish experience. And that's really expressed right at the very beginning. On page 165, the rabbi asks David after a little kind of small talk. He says, well, at least if you know you're lazy, that's a beginning. What would you like to discuss energetically today? So David responds as follows. I need to talk about Shabbat. In religious circles, that seems to be the key issue. I see that Shabbat observance is a kind of measuring rod by which a person's Jewishness is gauged. For example, I've been told that if a person is not Sabbath observer, he cannot be a legal witness at a traditional Jewish wedding. So I need to know more about it. All I do know is that it's a day of don'ts. Don't drive your car. Don't handle money. Don't answer the telephone. Don't do business. Don't listen to the radio or TV. Don't turn on the lights. Don't do anything. It seems so forbidding. What puzzles me is that those who observe it fully seem to love it and look forward to it and behave as if they couldn't live without it, literally. Mm-hmm. Something is wrong either with my perception of the day or with these people. And the fact is they all do seem quite normal. So it's interesting as in the position that I've been in for the last 13 years, where for 11 years, thank God, I've been the rabbi of this shul, but we've been here for 13 years, all in roughly in the frame of Jewish outreach. I was the director of the kollel 13 years ago for 5 years. It's sometimes hard to talk about the centrality of Shabbos because it unintentionally, for some people, it just draws a big line. In other words, people judge themselves and they feel that others judge them, although usually it's not other people judging them, it's themselves judging themselves. They feel that others judge them on which side of the line, right? So we don't ever talk about that, basically. I never talk about that because it makes people uncomfortable. And so what's the use of making people uncomfortable? And yet, if we're going to have a real conversation about it, it's undeniable that Shabbos is a big, huge deal. It's just undeniable. It's undeniable. And everybody knows it. Wherever their own Shabbos observance is, everybody knows it. Now, that said, there's something unbelievably fascinating about Shabbos. And that is that it's not a binary marker. It's not something where somebody says, I am either this or that. My relationship is either yes or no about Shabbos. It's not binary at all. It is just not. In fact, Shabbos is the best outreach tool for somebody who's far away from Yiddishkeit. And it is the best workout room for somebody who's righteous to work on their Yiddishkeit. It touches people, and this is rare if you think about it in the world. What conversation, what matter would touch a complete science novice and the Surgeon General? Nothing. Because for the Surgeon General, that's boring. And for the novice, that's Japanese, if you're talking on the Surgeon General's level. And Shabbos is profoundly powerful in the lives of the least religious and the most religious. And I don't think it's going to be denied either. You feel it. You sense it. You know it. And that's why it's very important that it is not binary. Because it's not an experience that you have to pass some threshold. And that's another reason I never talk about it. Because the threshold is way overrated. I mean it. I'll tell you what I mean by that. One of the worst places to be in as a Jew is a non-growing Shomer Shabbos person who says, I've grown. I'm there already. That's where those people go to fall asleep until they die, like fall asleep for 50 years in their Yiddishkeit. So I never talk about it anyway because that also, who's interested in thresholds that give people the opportunity to say, I'm off the hook. All right? Everyone has nisyonos, tests, and Shabbos is central in the life of every Jew who is working on whether he does any of the things mentioned here or working on whether he or she is being disciplined to not talk about non-Torah topics at the Shabbos table, which is not an actual transgression of Shabbos. It's just applicable and real and profound and important in Jewish life, no matter where the Jew is at. So this is fascinating. It was hard for me to read the chapter because I have so much to say on the topic, and I would like to open this week the floor to other people to talk about Shabbos, if you want. So I was thinking to myself, this cannot be contained in 1 hour, and yet we have to contain it in 1 hour. Because
we could stay, you
know,
right?
No, but
he does have a family. He'd like to do
this
in a while.
several lines just went through my head, including one in the film Field of Dreams, where the doctor Archibald Graham says, I best be going home, or I forgot his wife's name, is going to think I got me a girlfriend. So you might be able to stay all night, but I can't stay all night. Okay. So there's just so much to say. And I guess in summary of the opening remark I have is, let's not deny its profound importance. Let's not go to the, I'm uncomfortable, it's profoundly important. It is profoundly important and everybody knows it. So why is it so important? What is going on here that it is so important? So so the rabbi says here, in response to that opening remark that it seems like it's a day of don'ts, He says that all the people who love Shabbos seem to be normal, even though I, as the outsider, David says, seem like, why would anybody like that? So the rabbi says, you also seem to be normal. Let's begin from the beginning. For one thing, Shabbos is mentioned at least 15 times in the Torah. But even before it became part of the Torah, Shabbos was in God's plan prior to creation. Pardon me, I'm going to change it from now on for every time it says Shabbat to Shabbos. And the reason I do that is because I think that it resonates more emotionally, not only with me, but with most people. Okay? I could be wrong. I think it does. Like, depending on your background. But even before it became part of the Torah, Shabbos was in God's plan prior to creation. That is to say, Shabbos is part of the original blueprint of the world. According to the 13th chapter of Pirkei Rabbi Elazar, in the Lichadodi poem, which we sing on Friday nights, there's a significant statement about Shabbos. Sof ma'aseh b'machshava techila. Last indeed, but first in thought. Thus, Shabbos is not just an afterthought. Chronologically, it was the last act of creation. But it was, in fact, uppermost in God's mind when he began the creation. The period of holiness that we call Shabbos is, in fact, the cornerstone of Judaism. Without it, there is no Judaism. So again, David says that's a broad statement. How is that? And again, I want to underscore, there isn't anybody sitting around the table who doesn't have Shabbos. It's not a binary question. You also know, no matter what your relationship with Shabbos is, that without it there is no Judaism. You also know that. The idea is that just as he ceased creating on the seventh day, so do we. By not engaging in creative work on this day, we are not only fulfilling the fourth of the Ten Commandments, but we are underscoring our belief in the reason stated in that commandment, that God created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. Thus, Shabbos observance is our way of bearing witness that God is the creator of the universe. Now, there's a famous halachic work, which is a commentary on the Code of Jewish Law, the Shulchan Aruch, called Mishneh Berurah. Mishneh Berurah was written by the Chafetz Chaim, who's obviously more well-known in general for his writings about Lashon Hara, about, you know, evil speech about other people, gossip, etc. But the Chafetz Chaim, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Cohen of Radin, was a very profoundly amazing Talmud Chacham, a master of all of Torah. And about 110 years ago, he completed the Mishneh Berurah. Incidentally, he died in 1933 at the age of 103. So, and if any of you knows Rabbi Shragi Yankelevich, who is a Rebbe in the high school and is our chazanan for Shachris and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, his grandfather just died, Rabbi Yankelevich, and his grandfather was, I think, like maybe 105. Okay? And he was a student of the Chafetz Chaim, but not like a little kid. Like he was 28 when the Chafetz Chaim died, something like that, and was a student. So it's not so long ago, is the bottom line. Anyway, the Chafetz Chaim has this commentary on all of the order of the Shulchan Aruch called Orach Chaim, which discusses all laws that apply either on a daily basis, a weekly basis, a monthly basis, or an annual basis. It's basically how to live your daily life, and then goes on to, Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh and Yontif, all the way through to Purim, which is the end of the calendar cycle. I find it very interesting that the Chafetz Chaim does not write he writes an introduction at the beginning of the book about why the study of halacha is so profoundly important. And then he does not write another introduction, but writes a lengthy introduction before volume 3, which is the laws of Shabbos. Actually, volume 3 and most of volume 4 are the laws of Shabbos. But before that, he writes a multiple page introduction. It's a very important read. I don't know if it's translated anyplace. I know there is a translation of the Mishneh Berurah, but I don't think they translated that introduction. I'm not going to share with you the whole thing. But one thing he says there, which is really awesome, is he describes that every one of the mitzvos corresponds with a body part. That's not his idea. That's written already in the Kabbalistic works like the Zohar. That's why there are 248 positive commands, and there are 248 bones, and there's 365 negative commands, and there's 365, yeah, or something like that, or blood vessels or something. Not sure exactly what it is. Say again? Yeah, exactly. Whatever it may be. And we have this tradition, we know this tradition, that each mitzvah corresponds with a body part. So he says, in the body, there are things that a person can live without. Nobody wants to live without them, and it changes their life. But if you lose your pinky, so you live without it. And there are body parts that you can't live without. Heart, brain, spine, can't live without them. Says the Chafetz Chaim, Shabbos, the mitzvah of Shabbos, is the heart or the brain. That's what it corresponds to. It doesn't tell you which one, okay, as far as I recall. But that's how big a deal it is. And he talks about this idea that really, and the rabbi continues, actually, we'll continue in the rabbi's work and describe it here in the book, where he says, I want to see if I can find it quickly. On the top of 167, the rabbi says, there is a further point. When we end our labors on Shabbos, we are in fact declaring that we believe that God created us all. Thus, by observing the Shabbos, the Jew affirms the existence of God. That's why the Torah in Exodus 31:17 describes Shabbos as an oath or os. That is a sign or a symbol of the special relationship between God and the children of Israel. A kind of private understanding between us. A unifying banner around which the Jewish people gather and through which they bear living witness to God's presence. It's just such a big deal. That's really the bottom line. It's just such a big deal. I want to read to you from Rav Hirsch, who wrote in the 19th century in Frankfurt. It's an awesome book, unbelievable book. This book, Chorev, is such an incredible book. You'd think it was written in our generation. Chorev is a very long rational argument for Jewish practice. This was the raging time of the beginning of Reform in Germany, and Rav Hirsch published a book where he essentially speaks to why about every one of the mitzvos, every one of the practices, everything that's important to us. Interesting historical note is the publisher didn't want to publish it. So he wrote another work called The 19 Letters to get the publisher to publish that, which was shorter, and then the publisher agreed to publish Choriv. But he wrote it when he was 31.
What's the name of the book?
In English, they call it Horeb, H-O-R-E-B. This is a very old translation, but there is no newer translation. Maybe it's 60 years old, 50 years old, something like that. Now, he says like this. Heaven and earth, and that which fills heaven and earth, were created by God. This is page 62, chapter 21, called Prohibition of Work on Shabbos. Heaven and earth, and that which fills heaven and earth, were created by God. They were called into existence by God's, quote, let there be. And they regulated themselves obediently according to the Creator's law. But man also was called into existence through God's let there be. Freed from the compelling must, God's work summoned him to subject himself voluntarily to God's law in all his activity, to govern the created earth according to God's law. And the earth and the host of its beings were surrendered to this free government of man. Okay, it already needs explanation. Meaning everything else in the face of the earth must. The wind must. The lion must. It just follows its instinct. But man thinks he isn't must. He can make choices. And it's correct, he can make choices. He's compelled with certain urges and conscience, and he has to make choices. First the creation ever. So man becomes free, he's the governor of the whole world. What was there to safeguard the world against man? What safeguard that man in his position of honor would not forget God? That he would not look upon the world which had been entrusted to him to govern according to God's will as his own property? That in his controlling power over the things around him, he would not regard himself as master, and that he would not live in God's world solely according to his human will. Again, that was all asked the question, what was the safeguard? Since with his freedom, the road leading to degeneration was also open to man, what means was there of continually reminding him of his duty to be God's servant, of sanctifying him for the task, and continually providing mind and heart with renewed strength for it? In a word, what means was there for the ever-renewed education of man for his task? You can tell it's a great book. Right? Just tell. Behold, God crowned his work with the seventh day of creation, the first of human activity, and bestowed on it a constantly recurring sanctity and blessing, a sanctity that through it, man should be continually reminded of his appointment by God in God's world to be God's servant, and that he should devote himself to that capacity. A blessing that on the seventh day, spirit and mind should always gain renewed strength for the worthy fulfillment of his duty. The Sabbath, the first day on which God withdrew from active creation to invisible guidance of the universe, and on which the earth was laid open for man's government, thus became the symbol of man's appointment by God, symbol of God's rule and man's destiny. The arrogant men of Bavel spurned the teaching of the Shabbos, and thus suffered the experience and teaching of failure. So the Shabbos was transferred to the nation through which God wished to demonstrate to erring mankind his sovereignty and man's real task. In other words, it should have been belonged to everybody. Man was supposed to do this, but he failed. So God said, I need princes. I need representatives. Therefore, his nation was and should be not only man through God, but also nation through God, which it became by means of the redemption from Egypt, and which it remains. So the Sabbath now became the symbol of God's rule of the world and of Israel and of the task of the Jew as man and as Israelite. I could go on and on. I'm going to go on one more paragraph. Gets a little heavier. But how can the Shabbos become such a symbol, education and sanctification for this task? 6 days thou shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is a Shabbos unto the Lord thy God. How? In it thou shalt not do any manner of work. How above all does man show his domination over the earth? In that he can fashion all things in his environment to his own purpose. The earth for his habitation and source of sustenance. Plant an animal for food and clothing. He can transform everything, we're talking about man, into an instrument of human service. He is allowed to rule over the world for 6 days with God's will. On the seventh day, however, he is forbidden by divine behest to fashion anything for his own purpose. In this way, he acknowledges that he has no rights of ownership or authority over the world. Nothing may be dealt with as man pleases, for everything belongs to God the Creator, who has set man into the world to rule it according to his word. On each Shabbos day, the world, so to speak, is restored to God, and thus man proclaims both to himself and his surroundings that he enjoys only a borrowed authority.
That's good.
Okay, must read. Review, page 62, Choriv. But here's the point. Who could blame man if he thinks he's in charge? Did you know that man first went about creating metal? In other words, molding metal into stuff. Then was able to take a hunk of metal that weighs thousands of pounds and fly like a bird? It's so unbelievable. You can put hundreds of people inside of a metal box and they can take off like a bird? Man must be God. And if man as a whole is not God, then Boeing is God. Okay, it's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable what man can do. And that's just one example, of course. But you can't build an airplane on Shabbos. You can't even fly an airplane on Shabbos. Because man's not God. So 14% of the time, man has to say, I'm not God. And if not for that 14% of the time, he'll think he's God. Shabbos is so crucial to reducing the arrogance of the human experience. And the observance of Shabbos, the submission to Shabbos, of course, more profoundly, submits to that will that you're in charge, Hashem. You figure it out. You've been figuring it out for a long time. You know, the Spinker Rebbe is our guest in the winter sometimes, of Williamsburg. And I was talking to him about something that was concerning me, what I should do. And he wanted to get through to me a message. You can't solve it yourself. Don't worry, put your trust in Hashem. So he told me something his father told him, previous Spinker Rebbe. He said, every fall, all the leaves fall down. And that's happened for thousands of years. How many leaves is that? It's impossible to calculate the number of leaves that fall down and fill the forest. You would have thought that by now the forest would be filled with leaves. They should just be stacked high and fill the whole forest. And then what would happen is the animals can't live in the forest. So they enter the cities and man's in trouble. But while you're not paying attention, Hashem figures out something to do with the leaves. And they go away. Where do they go? Very hard to describe. But they go away, they dissipate, the animals stay in the forest, and you get to live in the cities. And it's happening every day, and you don't have to worry about it. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One Blessed Be, running his world. And we're not in charge. It's not up to us to solve it all. That's Shabbos. And I haven't even gotten past this first line of my notes. Okay? I could go on and on forever about this. And the rabbi does basically paraphrase, although maybe not specifically, the same thing we just read. He says, I can't find it right off. But he says the same thing, that basically you got to give the world back to Hashem. You got to give the world back to Hashem. Okay. I have a lot more to say, but before I continue speaking, I want to open the floor if anybody would like to say anything about the chapter, about Shabbos in general, about how one experiences Shabbos, its centrality, whatever you like. And you don't have to speak. Because if you don't speak, then we get to do one of my favorite things. I get to speak. Mm-hmm. Okay, you may. You'll come up with more thoughts later. You're welcome.
All right.
Okay.
Shabbos is so essential. Yet, why is it so difficult? Why is Jews tested over and over and over again about the observance of Shabbos in this world? Why does Hashem make it so difficult? I'll use my as an example. Okay, I was told if I work on Shabbos, that I have to work on Shabbos. I mean, even recently.
Because you're a nurse.
But what, even years ago when a lot of people came from Europe, they had to work on Shabbos to survive. I mean, it's always very difficult. I mean, of course, for me, there wasn't a question.
Okay, so let me cut you off there and tell you like this. In general in life, one has to be very weary of what we tell ourselves we have no choice about. Even if the choices are very hard. Right? So those people, three generations ago, that had a very difficult test,
mm-hmm.
but lost their jobs every Sunday morning, mm-hmm. you know, or Monday morning, whatever it was, right? The Ribbono Shel Olam rewarded them in this world and the next. There are countless people you meet today who say, you know, my Zaidi sacrificed for Shabbos. And many of the people who don't say my Zaidi didn't sacrifice for Shabbos, that's because they don't know they're Jews anymore. So there's reward in this world and the next for passing tests. And this central thing, I think we spoke about a few weeks ago, but maybe we didn't. This very central idea, which I'm not going to talk about at length now, which is that life is filled with tests. Okay? There are Jews who believe that life has no tests. What they mean is, if I want to do it, then it's okay. Right? If I want to do it, then it's okay. Sometimes we have temptations to do things, and it's still not okay. Right? So that's number one. But having said that, you're right. Shabbos is a very big test, even for me, for everybody, at their space. Rabbi Dessler, who was a great rabbi in the middle of the 20th century, first in Gateshead, England, first in London, then Gateshead, then in B'nai Brak. So Rav Dessler talks about a point called Nekuda Sabachira, which means your choosing point. Everyone's making choices. Just a question of where your choosing point is. Right? So, as it relates to anything, man wants to be a good husband. He is a good husband. So, his choosing point is in a loftier place as he's trying to be a more loving husband than the one who is a terrible husband. And his choosing point is someplace further down. So, everyone has a choosing point, and Shabbos puts that choosing point to the test all the time. Like I said, I know a woman. Very religious, she's been religious her whole life. One of the 39 categories of prohibited labor, and I really don't like to talk about halacha it's not a halacha class because I don't want to put anybody uncomfortable. So I'm just going to give one example, then we're not going to give more examples of this. But one of the 39 categories of created labor is that you're not allowed to shear a sheep. Right? So by extension, and this is obvious probably to everybody, you're not allowed to have a haircut or shave. These are categories of shearing. Same concept.
You mean on Shabbos?
On Shabbos. Oh. Yeah, on Shabbos. So that said, lots of people have a lot of tests around this. They don't have tests like they're going to take out their electric razor and shave, or go to the barber, or find their sheep to shear them, right? Their tests are pulling off the skin that's coming off the lips,
ooh,
biting the fingernails, you know?
I'm glad I don't
do
any of that.
Right? So I have that test. I know somebody who is always working on this test for years. Now, you can become obsessive and you have to be careful with that, right? But I'm not going to call that which is prohibited permitted. Right? So that's prohibited and she's working on it. Right? So you're right. It's central. Now, I'm going to answer your question. Your position was, it's difficult. So I took it to a different place to say, I agree with you, it's difficult. Now I'm going to ask you a question, why is it so difficult?
No, but why does Hashem keep on putting these tests in front of us?
Okay, because the answer is that anything that's truly important is going to be a preoccupation of your life. Mm-hmm. And is not going to be easy to achieve.
I found it very easy. The answer was no, and there was...
No, but it's not so easy to carry things out when it's no. That particular thing isn't your choosing point.
Oh, okay.
That thing that you found very easy is not your choosing point. That's, yeah, that's in the bag. It's not your choosing point. Right? Mm-hmm. Your choosing point is someplace else. Everybody has that. Everybody has that. You know, for one person, his choosing point is his favorite musician is coming to town on a Friday night. So it's a big nisayon, very difficult for him to not go to the concert. For another, that's a given he's not going to go to the concert, but not watching the ball game on Shabbos without turning it on because his team's in the playoffs, that's his choosing point. And why should he not watch the ball game without turning it on? Because it's holy Shabbos. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam wants you to have a rendezvous with him and not talk about silly things and do silly things. Right? So, but everyone's got their choosing point. Your choosing point isn't that. Good. You got one. I don't know what it is, and I don't, it's not my business.
I don't know either. Yeah. Okay. But, I don't want to stop feeling guilty.
Okay. But it's very important. But the point is that something that's profoundly central and important is hard. And there's nothing more rewarding than raising healthy, good kids. It's the very hardest enterprise of most people's lives.
Tell me that.
Yeah. You know, so there's nothing more important than that. You know, you have a wonderful marriage. When do you have to stop working on your marriage?
Never.
No. Right. You go, man, why isn't this getting any easier?
Right?
Because it doesn't get easier, because it's central, because it's profoundly important. Right? So it's very hard to daven with kavana, with intent.
Yes.
Very hard. Talmud even identifies it as something that always needs strengthening. It's very hard to commit time to Torah study. For most people.
Oh, it is.
Okay, it's central. It's central and it's hard. And that's okay. Right? That's okay. Okay.
So Hashem gives us all these tests. I mean, like when you, I don't remember which Tehillim it was, but I was reading it last Shabbos about how the regular people looks like they never suffer, everything looks good.
It's the one about Shabbos.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 92.
But, okay, maybe.
Yeah,
so,
it is.
But we, you know, we always have to struggle in everything.
Yeah, agreed.
It's hard.
Yeah, exactly. It is hard. Look, I want you to know something. The other choice to live with no tests, like I said, there are people who live with no tests. It's not because they don't have tests. It's because psychologically they think they have no tests.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so those people become nothing. Whether it's spiritually or it's physically or whatever it is in the area where they think they have no tests, they become nothing. For whom is it not a test to eat healthy? Of course it's a test for everybody to eat healthy.
Except you.
Right? I'm just saying, you know. No, but it could, because maybe your choosing point is in a different place. And you put it behind you a long time ago. I don't do these things. Right? And that's a healthy lifestyle to make certain things off limits and whatever it is. But it's hard. It's hard. Life is filled with tests. The cool news is, like we said last time, which I think was 2 weeks ago, that in the long run, this world, which is 70, 80, or 120 years, it's a very short time to have tests compared to eternity.
Yeah,
you know, I think there was another hand or comment. Yeah.
A phrase that I saw on a friend's chalkboard in his office said, "Get comfortable with the uncomfortable." And then he moved offices, and that got erased from his board. So I wrote it back on the board, and he laughed and he said, "You're right. You're right." I said, "That has become just
get comfortable like that." Get comfortable with
the uncomfortable. And I think it's a good phrase for me.
I agree very much. You know, it's funny when you are the rabbi of a shul, you speak very often publicly, right? So I don't know which things I say are remembered for a long time. You know, sometimes people say to me something you said 10 years ago, blah, 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 mm-hmm. Right? So there's one member of this shul who told me that one thing I said once, I don't remember, it's not so profound, not even my idea, but it's just like that. He says it's been so important to him.
Absolutely.
So I said, comfort is for losers. Okay, so it is. That's the bottom line, you know? So, and as you get more and more uncomfortable, shrinking into your chairs, right? So, okay. Another question or comment before I go on? Go ahead.
So when we first started keeping Shabbos, which was a very long time ago, my husband, I don't know if you remember, used to play racquetball.
Right. I was a very little kid. I don't know what when that was.
But play racquetball every single day.
Okay.
He and his partner. And when Friday, because when we started having kids, we started doing more. First we lit candles, then we had Shabbos dinner. Then when they were old enough, we didn't go out on Friday nights. So it was gradual. And my husband wanted to play racquetball. And when there was not every Friday night, but if there was a tournament, it usually was on the weekend. And so I used to say to him, if you do this, you keep doing this, you're going to lose.
Never lost on Friday night.
But I said to him when he came home after he won, he felt so good. I said, but you can lose tomorrow. And he did. He always lost. And it was like the lesson, you know, most of the time, 99% of the time. And so that was sort of like the lesson that God kept saying, okay, I'm telling you, now what are you going to listen to me? You're not going to win. And finally, he said, okay, I'm not going to play anymore on Shabbos.
To just further on that, we were at a retreat at Camp Shai. And Dick Greenberg was the scholar in residence. And I walked up to him and I said, I have this dilemma. I said, I love the competition. I really do. And I, you know, so I said, I don't know what to do. He said, you'll know when you're ready. That's all I told him. And I stopped playing.
It's a very important
thing. Like you're saying, it's hard. But that's not bad that it's hard. It's just hard. And when God keeps telling you something, you have to listen eventually, or you just disappear from doing it at all. But we weren't going in that direction. And so I knew eventually if I kept saying that.
I have a question for you. In the bigger game.
He's like me.
Did you win or did you lose?
Did I win?
I mean the big game.
You won.
The big game?
Look at your grandchildren.
Yeah.
And ours.
Of course. Huh. And what we did with our kids, because when we started doing this, was after the kids had already been playing games on Shabbos. I mean, we didn't do anything major. So when we started, and they would tell you, they thought we were nuts, because the first thing I did is I said, you can't watch television. But if you want to play, do you remember Atari?
Sure, 2600.
But you could play Atari, because I knew that I couldn't say to them, you can't do anything. From today to tomorrow, we're making this change. We've decided we're doing this. So I thought I was being really smart, and I said, okay, you can't watch TV, but you can't. I wanted to give them something that they didn't feel like everything was taken away. And now when I talk to them, you were really an idiot. Because why would you do that? We were allowed to play Atari, but we couldn't watch television.
Okay, you were making your calculation. And I want to tell you something about what you did, which was smart, and that a lot of people don't do in life. Nothing, not even Shabbos necessarily as the example, is you made it not all or nothing.
Yeah.
You know, that's a very smart thing to do. Now, there's a counterpoint.
Yeah.
Okay, and there's a counterpoint to both points that were just made.
Sure.
It's very smart to make it not all or nothing. You know, I once said from the pulpit, you know, we never ask anybody how they get here, and we never will. But if one finds himself inside of a car because they say, that's what I have to do, certainly everyone will agree you don't have to turn on or off the radio. Right? So that for somebody might be a test they can pass, right? You don't have to turn on or off the radio because you're in the car. It's not true. So it's not all or nothing, okay? The counterpoint is that when you can take more, then you put your choosing point higher, right? And if not, then you live in the tension of when am I going to do this? As one woman once said to me, she was inspired many years ago when she realized that God is definitely the author of the Torah to no longer eat shellfish. She said this to me. She said, but if I'm honest with myself, in the 12 years since then, I've made no further decisions. You know? And she was herself saying she could have at that moment of inspiration grabbed more, you know, taken more of the battlefield, so to speak. Now, here's the counterpoint to you'll know when you're ready, which I agree with. But the counterpoint is you don't know when you're going to die.
That's for sure.
And so the counterpoint is when you don't know when you're going to die, is, you going to wait until you're ready? And so it's tough stuff. But that's life of tests and tension and discomfort.
That is not a choice.
No, it's not a choice. But the point is that when the game is over,
it's over.
The game is over.
And if you miss the chance,
and if you miss the chance, I want to tell you a story. Can you do me a favor, Linda? Could you push the button on the air conditioning 3 times, the lower one?
Yeah.
No, it's not Chops. Yeah.
I was freezing.
It's just the bottom arrow 3 times. Okay, thank you. Great, perfect. Okay, so I want to tell you a story. I want to tell you a story, and I have so much more to say, so we're going to go back to the book after this. There was a person in our community who had a tremendous opportunity. Tremendous opportunity associated with tremendous reason not to keep Shabbos. Let's put it like that. Tremendous opportunity. Tremendous professional opportunity. That opportunity was going to end on a very clearly identifiable date. Okay? Let's call the person a movie actor. He wasn't. Okay? Let's call him a movie actor. And they were going to be filming for, you know, the next 10 Saturdays. And he said, after the 10th Saturday, I'm going to keep Shabbos. And that's exactly what happened, by the way. But I told him, I said, think about the profundity of passing the test before the test is over. Think about the idea that when the test is over, so you don't have the test anymore. It's not that, oh wow, you didn't accomplish it when the test is over, right? And again, whatever each person's test is, and it's not, God forbid, for any other individual to judge at all. And I would be less comfortable speaking about this if I didn't feel that over the many years of this shul, my approach to it speaks for itself. There's no judgments going on, you know. But it's central and it's important. And you never know when you're going to die. And when you're ready, do it. And you can take the more battleground you can take, take it. And sometimes break it into bite size. And you have to know yourself. To know yourself. Right? But I want to tell you one other thing. Actually, I take that back. You have to know yourself. Really, the Torah recipe is you don't know yourself. You're filled with your own biases. You're filled with your own lies to yourself, every single one of us, about what I'm ready for, what I'm not ready for. And the Torah's recipe really is expressed in the very beginning of Pirkei Avos, within the first few Mishnayos, I forgot what number, maybe number 6, where it says, make for yourself a teacher and acquire for yourself a friend. Aseh lecha rav u'kaneh lecha chaver. You don't know yourself, so you got to talk it over with other people, because you let yourself off the hook. Everybody lets themselves off the hook. Because we want it easier. Okay, now, the rabbi writes here, and then now we move away from this binary to the profundity of life. The rabbi writes here on page 166. He says in the first of the long 2 paragraphs, as we will see later, he doesn't need the rest, but certain good things happen to us when we imitate his rest on the Shabbos. And God wants good things to happen to us. David asks, such as, the rabbi responds, such as giving us a sense of spiritual purpose and allowing us to explore our higher selves, besides giving us a day of physical and spiritual rejuvenation. Bear in mind also that by observing Shabbos, a Jew is in effect restating there's only one master in the universe. This may not seem to be a very significant statement, but the fact is that without it, man does tend to see himself as the dominating force in the world. Here's the rephrase of Rav Hirsch. And he says further on the top of the next page, I am not omnipotent, you are. I hereby restore the world to you, its rightful owner, is what a person's saying. But I want to go back to the first thing he says, which is exploring your higher self. When the world was created, the Chumash says, the Torah says, it was tohu vavohu. Those are hard words to translate, but basically what they mean is utter confusion. Utter confusion.
When the world world was created.
When the world before the world was created, the existence was tohu vavohu, utter
chaos.
Thank you. The very first thing that God created is light. It says that God said, Yehi Or, there should be light, Vayehi Or, and there was light. This idea of utter chaos, and then there was light, is expressed by the late Slonimer Rebbe called the Nesiva Shalom as a paradigm of what is experienced in every generation, in every week, between the weekdays and Shabbos. Total chaos, and then light. Now, the rabbi writes here on 174, he writes, David says, I guess it does require a plunge of sorts, but it frightens me. Listen to this unbelievable thing. It may seem frightening at first, but soon enough the waters become very comfortable. In any case, this is how those seemingly forbidding do's and don'ts create a special kind of day for us. At the very least, if I can't watch TV, then I pick up a book. If I can't ride somewhere, I stay in the neighborhood or at home, and so visiting with friends becomes natural. Talking with one's own family has become almost a rarity in modern society, except for those who observe Shabbos.
It's true.
Or I may read something Jewish, or just think, which we rarely have time to do during the week. I might even consider visiting the neighborhood synagogue, and if there's a study group there, I might join it Friday night or Shabbos afternoon, and so forth. And before you know it, the day is transformed from a day of ordinary activity into something quite spiritual and constructive. Besides which, Shabbos is not only a series of thou shalt nots, he miswrites it here a little bit, there are many thou shalts, many do's. That's why the set of commandments in Exodus speaks of remembering Zachor, Shabbos day, and the set in Deuteronomy speaks of observing or protecting Shamor, Shabbos day. This was written in 1994. It's incomparably more true in 2015 than from 1994.
Yeah.
Okay? This is the enemy to thinking. Most people get in the car, I'm talking about regular days, and the very first thing they do is turn on the radio or pick up the phone. Most people on purpose invite noise into their lives at all times so that they don't have to think. When they don't have anything else to do, most people, including me, check whether they got a new email and read their texts. And children growing up today are seriously at risk of addiction to the dopamine rush of, you know, when I was a little kid, and when everybody here was a little kid, it was very exciting to get mail. If you got mail, you know, it was a thrill. Then you grow up and you find out that it's all filled with bills. Okay? but when you got mail, and that's a real psychological experience, a physiological experience where the brain has a dopamine rush that says, I'm important. Something important is happening to me. Wow, exciting. And now it happens even with, it's every moment. Am I important? Am I going to get that message that somebody wants to communicate with me? And I'm younger than everybody else at this table. I am the edge last generation. I am the last generation that did not grow up in their childhood with all of this. Because basically, email and the internet and all that came out in about 1994. And I was already a high school graduate by 1 year. Okay? How can anybody have a life now without Shabbos? This is so true. What happens when you have this? What happens? You know what happens is people, in addition to all this, people live near one another. They live near people they like. And so anywhere where there's observance, there's Jewish neighborhoods. Anywhere where there's a lack of observance, over time, there's no Jewish neighborhoods. And so on and so forth. The good things that happen, now here's what, I'm going back to what he said before. And experiencing and getting to know your higher self. As a matter of personal discipline, I try to be present to two thoughts every single Shabbos. Number one is during Lecha Dodi on Friday night. I think about how I've behaved over the last week. What needs correction. And during Yedid Nefesh, which we sing at Shalosh Shittos, I try to think about, what do I accept upon myself to accomplish this coming week in my spiritual self? How can I be better? I'm not telling you that to brag. I'm just telling you that without Shabbos, there would be no hope to stop and think about what's important. So says the Nesiv HaShalom, the whole life is chaos. Again, most profoundly with the machines. Tohu vavohu, utter confusion, utter don't think. There's something to get your noise into your head. And then there's hope because there's Shabbos and there's light. And you think about what's most important, and you think about what sacrifices you're willing to make to have the great things in life, and what your relationship with Hashem is like, and what messages are you hearing from the Torah, and you think. It really boils down to think. You have a chance to think. So many good things come from it, including coming in touch with your higher self, and that's the light of Shabbos, the bracha and the sanctity of Shabbos. Two other quick things. It's not your generational test. But it is the test of everybody under the age of 40.
Yeah, it is.
Okay,
it is.
And you know what? When you under the age of 40 includes a lot of people now, including people who are adults for 20 years.
But the biggest generation.
The biggest. No, but that's not consequential. I'm saying the fact is that this is it's a huge, huge test for people to be mindful, to be aware, to think.
And the problem with that is also instant gratification.
Of course.
Well, because of the computer.
Yeah, because of the boom.
Right.
Go ahead.
My family constantly talks about Facebook and did you see that picture? Did you get that picture? And I refuse.
Good for you. I also do.
I want to tell you something very important.
This is very, very important. What is a big test for one is not a big test for another.
Exactly.
And so therefore, it's important that for one, they may not see any challenge, and in fact, it may not be a bad thing for them. Right? Like, so if somebody has some technological connectivity. That's I'm not passing judgment on that. I do have a smartphone, you know.
Retarded.
You know, you should know that my phone, though, however, does not have a web browser. It's locked out by parental control. The parent happens to be the friend I've chosen to be the parent. Right? My mother and father don't have a say on what's on my phone. You know, I'm old enough to make my own decisions. But I've decided that as long as I've had this phone, I haven't had a web browser, and that's 6, 7, 8 years. I don't know what it is. Yeah, I can't access the internet. I can get my emails. I can do other things. I can't access the internet. So anyway, but I can't access the internet. But I want to be very clear. It depends. It's very, very important. I want to underscore this 100 times. That doesn't mean that for somebody who does have that, it's a problem. It's fine. Every person has their tests. You know, every person has their tests. And so that's that. And it's important to understand also when you talk to younger people, sometimes they don't even know what you're talking about.
Yep.
They don't even know what you're talking about. I once gave a drush on Shavuos that was the talk of the town among the people who were older than 50. So excited about what I said. I find out later in the day that there are people who want to leave the shul over it, who are under 30. Okay? And it's because I was totally out of touch. You know, my biggest thing about Facebook, you should know, is not content. Okay, the reason I haven't had Facebook originally was because I don't want content. I don't want somebody's illicit pictures in my head. Fine. What I came to realize was the real problem for me was that I don't want to be part of the whole soapbox society of like everyone's an expert about something they know nothing about and stands on their soapbox and comments at this very moment about that blah, blah, blah. Now, then later on, a few years later, I realized it's easy for me to judge them. I have a soapbox. So I don't need Facebook because I get to give drushes, I get to write an email to anybody I want all the time to the whole shul, blah blah blah. So who am I to judge?
Twitter is worse than Facebook.
Yeah.
FaceTime is even worse.
I don't know about FaceTime. That. FaceTime is fine. What's wrong with FaceTime?
Because how do you stay in touch with your kids? How
it's a great, that's a good thing, but I will tell you, just so you know, everything in the world has the positive side and the negative side. Okay? And do you know attendance to funerals that you have to travel for is at an all-time low and growing in its lowness? Because every single funeral director in America now will stream funerals live.
Oh, okay? That's terrible.
But there, it's not terrible. It's fine. They stream the speeches from the chapel because the cousins are in South Africa and the sister is in wherever, and that's good.
Yes.
And the negative of it is that was like the last thing standing that was going to bring everybody back together. So, but it's good.
For a funeral than a wedding.
Okay, but it's good. And it's not good. You know, I made a bris, Baruch Hashem, in the middle of June. My father lives in Israel. He saw the bris. My wife's grandparents saw the bris. My brother saw the bris. You know, how did it happen? Because somebody with their phone tapped into something and webcast the bris. Right? So that's a beautiful thing. And so everything has the positive and everything has the counterpoint negative. Okay, so now but I want to go back to 2 points before the time runs out. The first point is as follows. The rabbi just touched on this in the book a little bit. There are two sides to Shabbos. One of them gets much, much more attention than the other. The two sides to Shabbos are, number one, the things we're not allowed to do. But number two, the things we are not allowed to do. That gets much more attention. That's on people's consciousness. The second part, which is its equal partner, is the things we are obligated to do on Shabbos. The meals, Kiddush, candles, and so on. Havdalah. In one place, the Torah records, the Ten Commandments are recorded twice in the Torah. Once in the book of Shemos, once in the book of Devarim. In one place it says, Zachoras Yom HaShabbos L'Kadosho. Remember the Shabbos to sanctify it. The sages tell us that means, well, how do you remember it? By stating it's Shabbos. This cosmos made no mention of Shabbos. So the heavens don't tell you it's Shabbos. In other words, the heavens tell you it's a new month with a new moon. The heavens tell you it's a new day with a sunrise. The heavens tell you that it's a new year with a new season. But the heavens don't tell you that it's Shabbos. So when you proclaim it's Shabbos, that's a very big deal. Bearing witness, it's Shabbos. Eating special meals, dressing nicely, it's Shabbos. The other side is, restore the Shabbos to its owner and don't do the things that are your creative. Don't build airplanes, so to speak. Don't write novels, and so on and so forth. Don't even sew beautiful garments. Right? Withdraw. Relinquish the power to God. But I want to go back to the first piece. The Torah says, in a very famous passage, it's in Parshas Ki Sisa, in the middle of Shemos, but it's also part of the davening and the Kiddush, so a lot of people know it. It's in twice in davening. The Torah says, V'shamru v'nei Yisrael as Shabbos, la'asos as Shabbos, l'dorosam risolam. The Jewish people shall observe the Shabbos, that's v'shamru, to perform, to make the Shabbos, la'asos as Shabbos, for their generations, a covenant forever. I once heard from a rabbi who was visiting here, Rabbi Stauber from Bnei Brak. Maybe he lives in Yerushalayim, I don't remember. And Rabbi Stauber said, in the name of some earlier sage, why does the Torah say two verbs here? You shall observe the Shabbos and you shall perform the Shabbos. It says because, and the rabbi writes this too here, because it is possible to observe Shabbos by, when Shabbos comes in, getting into your bed or your hotel room or wherever and never doing anything wrong. Staying in one place, doing nothing wrong. That is observance of Shabbos. That fulfills the first word, Vishamru. But the second word, La'asos HaShabbos, means to make the Shabbos. You make the Shabbos with the meals, with the davening, with the Torah study, with the Zmiros, the Shabbos songs. And that is the one that transfers from generation to generation. It's when it's la as a Shabbos, you perform the Shabbos, lidorosam. Then it continues for all the generations. What kind of a recipe would it be to sell people the following? Here's the thing, don't do all this stuff. Kid, my boy, don't do these wonderful, delicious, exciting things like your favorite performers coming to town, etc. Don't do this. Walk in the heat. You know? No, the whole delight is in all the other parts, which is a command, because you're having a rendezvous with God, because that's what we do when we're in a relationship. There's lots of things we don't do when you're in a relationship. We don't violate the relationship. We don't slap one another in the face. We don't, a lot of things we don't do. And there's a lot of things we do because we're in a relationship. We honor the person. We honor their birthday, or we care for them at their time of need, or whatever it is. We're in a relationship. Shabbos is the center point of this relationship. And when you do these things, there's tremendous reward for all the generations. There's a famous story about the great Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Shach. Rav Shach, who lived to well past 100 years old, he was the Rosh Yeshiva of Panovich in Bnei Brak. It's said about him that his only son became like politically involved and not a great Torah scholar. I don't want to pass judgment about it. That's what I hear. And that his neighbor, who was a blue-collar worker of some kind, had several sons who became great Torah sages. So it's said, the story is told that he was asked, how do you explain this?
That your
neighbor, his sons became these great Torah luminaries and your son did not. Listen to what Rav Shach said. He said, because when we were saying words of Torah at our table, they were singing Zmiros. In other words, it's nice to give over a good idea, whatever, cold, stern messages, whatever. But that Shabbos table was filled with song. Their Shabbos table was filled with lasos the Shabbos to make the Shabbos great. Their Shabbos table was filled with contact with Sinai. I can go on and on and on about the following topic, which I'm not going to do. But when we got the Torah, we not only got the information, but we also had the wonder, the thunder and lightning of Sinai. We came in contact with the divine. Shabbos is the opportunity to come in contact with the divine, but not from the observance of the laws of the dish thou shall nots. Only from the experience of the Shabbos table, the davening, the whatever. So for me personally, for example, and again, not passing any judgment. Very recently, I missed going to shul on Shabbos for the first Shabbos of my adult life. I had to make a decision that I had to do, whatever it was. It served a certain need. But I have absolutely no temptation, none at all, to go and rendezvous with some other rendezvous on Shabbos. I want to be there for the making of the Shabbos, not just the observing of the Shabbos. So that's the other side of it, and that's where all the fun is. Now, the last point I want to make is as follows. In Kiddush, we say that Shabbos is a commemoration of the creation of the world. Three-word phrase, Zecher L'Maaseh Bereishis. We also say that it's a commemoration of the Exodus from Egypt. Zecher L'Yitzias Mitzrayim. Now this should bother every person alive, because Shabbos was created 5,776 years ago, almost, and we left the land of Egypt 3,300 and something years ago. How can it possibly be that something that existed for thousands of years before a historical event can commemorate the historical event? Everyone here knows that Martin Luther King Jr. Day started in 1986. Now, if you don't remember that it was 86, you know it was around then. Okay? Obviously, Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday did not become a national holiday in 1820 or 1930 because he hadn't done his thing yet. So you have to have the event commemorating the historical reality after. Shabbos is around for 5,776 years, but Pesach didn't happen. Leaving the land of Egypt didn't happen until later. How's that possible? Here's the answer. For certain, the essential commemoration of Shabbos is creation. somebody asked you in an elevator, why do the Jews walk on Saturday? You would say, because God created the world in 6 days and rest on the seventh. So it's about creation. And it says that in the first of the sets of the Ten Commandments. It says those exact words. Because it is a sign that God created, because in 6 days God created the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them, etc. In the second set of the Ten Commandments, there is no mention of creation. None. It's really worth looking up. It's in the second, it's in like roughly Devarim 6 or something like that. Second parsha of Sefer Devarim. It says, instead of where it says creation in the first set, it says, and you shall remember you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and God took you out of the land. And God took you out of the land and made you free people. What's that got to do with Shabbos? So here's the answer. Shabbos may very well commemorate that God created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. But when somebody says, why did the Jews walk down the street on Shabbos? There's two questions being asked. Question number one is, why does anybody walk down the street that day? Because God created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. The second question being asked is, but why do the Jews do it? Why is that people the people that has the privilege of being the ones to bear witness? In other words, if I have a major event celebrating the bicentennial of America or the tricentennial of America, that's one thing. It marks that something happened. But if we honor the person to carry out that event, to sing the national anthem or read the Declaration of Independence or whatever it is, who do we honor to do that? Oh, this person happens to be the grandchild of three presidents. That's why this one's the one to do it. So we have to ask the questions, why us? That's because God took you out of the land of Egypt. So it ends up like this. The cosmos do not announce that Shabbos has come. They don't announce that God created the world. There is no new moon. There is no new sunshine. There is no new season. There's just somebody with the privilege to take the microphone of the world and say, the master of the universe created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. There's a special group of people that gets to be that witness. You're them. We're them. Our children are them. Our grandchildren, with God's help. We are that group. That commemorates our specialness. And our specialness is found in that God took us out of the land of Egypt and made us his people. So when we include ourselves in that partnership, it's such a big thing. It's not a small thing. It's like the biggest thing ever. You get to be the one bearing witness because you're the chosen people. And that commemorates creation, and it commemorates that you're the chosen people, which means it commemorates the choosing, which was the redemption from Egypt. Okay. There's a lot more to say, Frank, but we'll have to stop here for now.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.